gaming got them. Oh, you're muted?
I was just bragging about how I was the first one here for a second. But
Yeah, everyone's queued up until I unleash the floodgates and they come in. I'm continually surprised, though, that we even have anybody showing up, given that it's this time of the year.
So. We're all at home, right? What else are we doing?
So, we'll give people another minute to show up. We have Gong set up now, and Gong is automatically kicking off these recordings for me. So, it's I need to update our workflow somehow around this.
What's the service called? Gong?
Gong. Yeah, gong.io. It's like a CRM for your meeting recordings and conversations.
Cool. I was using Fred Fireflies or Fireflies recently with Google Meet. This looks a little more comprehensive.
It's a very legit solution and supports every video conferencing thing out there. So even if your organization uses multiple platforms, you can bring them together with this. And then it ties into your CRM, whether that be Salesforce or HubSpot. We use HubSpot. And you can tie it all together and come up with workflows. It's pretty rad.
Nice. I was chatting with a vendor sometime in the past couple months, and they've got like this AI bot that'll join. And I guess as they're talking to us, the AI bot will, I guess, ping them or like give them
It might have almost been the same one. So Gong has two integrations. One is a bot that joins, and you can rename that bot to whatever you want it. And they might have just been using that. I see it with so many other customer conversations or calls that I'm on with that. Anyway, sorry. Let me get started here. It is time to kick things off. Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours. It's December 30th, 2020. My name is Eric Osterman, and I'll be leading the conversation. You got to hear a little bit of our water cooler conversation before Office Hours today. A little different format, I guess. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We are a DevOps accelerator, and that means that we help companies own their infrastructure in record time by building it together with your team and then showing them the ropes. So if that sounds interesting, head over to cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. Again, that's cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. For those of you new to the call, the format is very informal. My goal is to get your questions answered. So feel free to unmute yourself at any time if you want to jump in and participate. If you're tuning in from our podcast or YouTube channel, you can register for these live and interactive sessions by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, that's cloudposse.com/officehours. We host these calls every week. We'll automatically post a video recording of this session to YouTube, as well as follow up with an email so you can share it with your team. So with that said, let's kick it off. I managed to get a few things out here. One was actually from yours truly, Venkata here, is that I want to issue a retraction of something that we suggested last week, which was based on incomplete information. And that's my fault for spreading these horrible lies and rumors that Amazon would release a product fully baked. And they did not. So Amazon Cloud Shell is something really awesome for enterprise environments, especially where you have no control over your workstation and what you can install. But unfortunately, they decided, let's take that and extend it to the cloud. So we will not let you run Docker in this shell to run your tool chain because, you know, in DevOps, we don't use Docker anymore, right? Or not. Currently it does not support Docker in these containerized environments. You can install Docker, you just can't run it or do anything, which is super annoying. So thanks, Venkata, for speaking up. Sorry, everyone, for sending you down a rabbit hole. I'm sure they'll get to it. Any questions on that or anything else to add to that? All right, next topic, a little bit off the beaten path. 2016 or so, Cloud Posse was doing a little bit of Beanstalk, and turns out we have one of the more popular modules for Elastic Beanstalk. That said, we don't really use it, and I can't say that we are the best to provide the ongoing thought leadership for this. We'll continue hosting it. It's not getting deprecated. It's here. It's going to be tested. We'll eventually get to your pull requests. But we do have a bunch of pull requests piling up. And I would love if somebody who's using the Beanstalk module would step up. And if you want to help us maintain and review this, please reach out to me on Slack or email me or something like that. I'm pretty easy to find. So that's that. So there's a issue I opened up here, call for maintainers. Feel free to just also comment on this issue if you guys see me. It just said that my network was switching or something.
Yep, you're fine.
All right, cool. Hey, Vlad, good to see you again.
Hey.
So last thing is just, it's official. We are growing a lot in 2021. So we will be... My plan is so far to try and bring on, one person per month or so every month of 2021, based on our current growth trajectory. So please get yourself into our pipeline if you're interested at some point working with Cloud Posse. So we know of you, and we have a job posting that's live. This is a call for U.S.-based subcontractors. So this is not W-2. And it's for senior level engineers. So please check that out. Andy, can you share the links from the slides in the channel?
Yippee.
Sweet, thank you. All right, so talking points. Let's see. We've got a few good questions that came up. Some we've talked about before, but they come up again, so I'll just share them. But let's start with the first good question here. It came up from Pepe. Pepe is one of our open source community contributors. He has, if you've submitted a PR, he's probably reviewed and approved it at some point. He's amazing. So big shout out and thank you to Pepe for that. So let's answer Pepe's question. He can't join though today. But Venkata has the same question, so you can maybe add some color to it. As I pull this up here. Oh, pen test vendor. Okay, I didn't see that yet, but yeah, I'll bring up some thoughts on that. So this is the question here Pepe was asking. So looks like Pepe is making a foray into EKS. I know he's been using a lot of ECS, and he has a lot of good questions lately. Here's another one, kind of. What is the recommended way when using EKS clusters for, say, CI/CD or control plane management, and you want to keep the ingress private in a private subnet? Will that work? For example, we keep our CI/CD systems behind the VPN, and since I was playing with Argo CD, I was just using port forwarding option. So I think there were a couple suggestions here. Let's see, under the threads. And was it the mic? I think for ingress on private subnet, do AOB or NOB subnets. Yeah, that's good. Here's what I'm going to add to this. So obviously you guys can deploy a VPN. VPNs are a tried and true method of exposing internal services. And even based on what I'm about to say, you might still need to. Maybe you're using services that need layer 3, layer 4 connectivity. Don't just speak HTTP. However, Jenkins or your CI system is probably not one of those. Argo CD is not one of those. So you have two options here, I would say. One is expose Argo CD via a identity aware proxy, which is this whole beyond corp security model stuff you hear, zero trust. This is like the biggest growth industry within DevOps for 2020, probably because of COVID and the working from home madness. So with this, the way it works is you deploy, like HashiCorp has Boundary. We've been using Keycloak with Gatekeeper, which I don't recommend right now, so stay away from that. But Teleport released their application access proxy, which does it. Cloudflare has Access, or I think they call it One now. Okta has their proxy. Duo has their proxy. I can't keep track of how many of these solutions exist. And what it is it's still a VPN. It's just a different way of thinking about a VPN. So like a traditional VPN, You connect to that VPN, it gives you layer 3, layer 4 connectivity, and depending on the sophistication of the VPN, might control what networks or machines you can connect to. But by default, it's usually overly permissive, and that's not what we want. So what is a VPN? It's basically TLS over a network with tunneling and some client you install to work with your local network interfaces and set up that point-to-point tunnel. What if we just simplify this whole thing and we just use HTTPS? And we do that already. Those are tunnels. And what if we stuck a authentication proxy in front of that connection, so when you authenticate it, you know, make sure that you are who you say you are, it sends you a push notification, all that stuff, can time out your session, and it established one tunnel point-to-point for that one service. And if you want to log into that other service, the same thing happens over again, but it's a point-to-point tunnel for that one service. And it's all just regular HTTP. And that's what this whole BeyondCorp Identityware proxy madness is all about, and why I recommend getting this in, because it solves a lot of the problems for, once you have your CD system in, how are you going to access like your preview environments? Are those going to be public? You want to secure them? Or do you have to get on the VPN to access those as well? So yeah, as Vlad points out here, the Teleport Application Access Proxy is pretty sweet. We do have like 5 or 6 feature requests open for it, so we can get feature parity with what we have been doing with KeyCloak, Gatekeeper, and Foxel, which is a application discovery dashboard by another party. All right, so that was a roundabout way of saying that. Okay, then the other thing is like, how do you architect Argo in this situation that you're doing it? For those of you not familiar with Argo CD, Argo CD is to Kubernetes what Terraform Cloud or tacos are for Terraform. Basically, it only knows how to do Kubernetes, and if you want to do anything else, well, make it run in Kubernetes with an operator or something, and then it can do it. But it's not going to do any other kinds of deployments or delivery for you. And what's interesting about when you use Argo is that you can now separate like the separation of concerns. So Argo CD doesn't worry about where your so Argo CD is concerned about secrets, but your CI system isn't. And your CI system has therefore lesser access privileges. So when you set up Argo, you're connecting it, so it's tunneling out of your environment, your VPC. So therefore, technically Argo doesn't even need to be public. It's public if you want to see the dashboards, and that's why you would want to expose it in some way. Your question is, like, do we create a separate automation cluster, or how do we do it? And I haven't found a canonical best practice. Oh, thank you, Matt Galloway, for pointing out Tailscale. Seems like a really awesome solution. Simplifies the whole thing. We haven't yet tried it internally, but darn it, I'm going to make a note to do that, because we have a specific use case for it right now. All right.
I've got a module coming for you soon, so I'll put that up at some point.
What was that, Matt?
I've got a module for this that I've built out that I haven't implemented for a client yet. So it's built on Cloud Posse, you know, example module. So I'll
PR. Oh, cool convention. So we can publish that. That's awesome. Thank you, Matt. That's really cool. We'll keep everybody updated if that makes its way out. So back on where I was saying, so I haven't found like a canonical, you know, like official reference architecture for deploying Argo. I guess because depending on your complexity of your infrastructure, you might need more or less. But at a minimum, I would recommend at least 2 Argo CDs in your environment, because Argo CD is now in your critical path for you're doing your deployments, and you're going to need to do updates to Argo. You're going to need to be able to do those in a safe and sane way. And just like Jenkins, where Jenkins, like, who needs HA? Who needs to think about having multiple Jenkins masters? Or you can pay enterprise and get it. Argo CD is kind of taking the same approach, which I don't blame them. It simplifies a lot. But if you need to upgrade any of the plugins for Argo, and you're deploying Argo with, you know, in Docker under Kubernetes, you're probably going to have to redeploy it, and that's a disruptive operation, and you're going to want to minimize those in production. All right, so we've isolated it down that we need at least 2, so like prod and non-prod. But then the question is like, well, what if we, so you, presumably you probably have like one prod environment, but you might have a dozen or more non-prod environments. So you have one Argo for those. Well, those might be, at least if you're a Cloud Posse customer, those are probably in multiple separate AWS accounts. So like you have a UAT account, you have a dev account, you got a sandbox account, you got a staging account, you got accounts. And if you only have one Argo for all those, well, now the scope has increased because how is Argo going to manage the connections to all those Kubernetes clusters? So that means you're going to have a transit gateway probably set up or VPC peering. So increases the complexity. The other thing is like, so what if we just always deploy Argo per cluster in that case? So you've got lots of Argos. Now you lose a little bit of the visibility on how things are getting deployed across multiple environments. And you also have the startup cost of, or, you know, the onboarding cost of getting those Argos set up. So the more fully automated you want this stuff to be, the more magical, the more effort it's gonna be. All right, so that's on the Argo, like one or many, or how many, or, you know, question. But then the next question is like, how many repos? So Argo's done a lot of work to optimize this. It's I think a lot of it's been spearheaded by Intuit, that is big users of Argo CD. And the problem with GitOps is it really exasperates the problem of large repos over time. So if we, let's say we create one deployment repo per Argo instance. So if we had a prod and non-prod, we'd have a prod deploy and non-prod deploy repos, let's say. And in the non-prod environments, we're doing preview environments. So like for every pull request, we might be deploying a full set of the environment. That repo in a larger organization with a lot of activity, that's gonna get pretty large. And while Argo has its caching service, which will continually fetch and pull that to keep it relatively up to date, there comes a point when it's ridiculous. And I don't know what point that is, especially if you're storing your images as part of your deployments for some reason. Like that, you know, tens of gigs is not unreasonable for a GitHub repository. So it's like, well, maybe then we should be having multiple repos per Argo CD, or I don't know. So this is the reason why this is something I'm talking so much at length at. This is what we've been going through lately as we're trying to develop some best practices around this that we can ship with our customers. So anybody using Argo here or have more insights or something they want to bring up, maybe Vlad or somebody?
A surprising way, I'm not using Argo CD or Flux or any of the fancy new GitOps things. They're not mature. I'm unhappy with that. Like Argo and Flux were supposed to merge and use the same code base. That went to shit, excuse my language. Flux V2 was launched. They're awesome. I played with them. I love them. I'm not going to put them in production and get like 25% of my sprint randomly filled with Argo and Flux work. That doesn't work for me. Also, like, it depends. Doing GitOps for... There's automation that makes sense in GitOps, and there's automation that doesn't make sense in GitOps. If you are running a SaaS company and you gotta have an environment per tenant or something like that needs to be handled through code, through your application logic. I've seen people do that with GitOps and GitHub Actions, are the adding code and pushing environments and then automatically calling Terraform apply and bullshit like that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. We've had to deal with it this year. We actually did what you said. Like we did for these short-lived POC demo environments. We did actually not use Terraform, and we just used CLI-based controls with CloudFormation to trigger it for that reason. But yeah, boy, we're like splintering off here. So Venkata, how far have you come in your Argo CD journey? Do you have any other questions there, or did we just create more questions for you?
Maybe a couple comments. So I've deployed Argo CD, spent a few days last week getting my head wrapped around it. Intent being, we want to do self-service for our development team. And
yeah.
It's a pretty good option to do that. And the whole how many repos thing, and then on top of that, where do you put your Helm charts? Do you have one Helm chart? Like, do you have the Helm chart next to the source code, or do you have it like in one repo? So a lot of like, you know, a couple things to still be answered on my end. I am leaning towards one repo at the moment. I was able to bootstrap the cluster pretty well, like very easily with RFCD, just having it bootstrap the ingress controllers and everything else. So,
it's a semi-reversible decision. However, as soon as you realize, oh, new release of Argo came out.
I was factoring in the recovery. I probably spent more time figuring out how do I break it and recover it than it was figuring out the directory structure. And your comment around two clusters, I was going down that path for a little bit. And I kind of, my opinion is right. I mean, there's some risk to this approach, but my opinion is I can disable the auto synchronization. And if I were to do that, then I should be able to dump out a, you know, an export. Like the backup utility looks very solid from Argo CD. Mm. And then restore it with the new image. And it shouldn't synchronize to prod, but there is that situation where someone writes a bug and disabling the synchronization doesn't actually disable the synchronization. And then you get the new image and potentially risk for prod. But I see the benefit of two clusters. I'm probably going to, based off your comments of two clusters, they're probably going to do one for all of pre-prod and then one for production.
Yeah.
Maybe
you need some place for things to burn in too sometimes. Yeah. And even if you can bring it up temporarily, it's not synonymous to running two separate environments.
I actually didn't know about the PR feature you were talking about, because my plan was to get my team going into the UI and clicking on the umbrella chart that they want to deploy the stack of, and then just having them do booleans of some sort to quickly say, yes, deploy this or don't deploy this.
Yeah, no, so we've been doing preview environments for several years now, and the key is just to, if it fits your security model and everything else, it's so easy. If you have a chart and or a set of charts and you deploy those into a new namespace. So then you basically can have a folder structure where you have like a namespace for preview environment. And your CI process is just responsible for manipulating that repository.
Yeah, I actually didn't know. It sounded like you were doing it based off PRs. I thought when it looked at the Argo CD docs, you could only point it to one branch, right?
No, it's only pointed to one branch, but your CI, it's a different, like conceptually slightly different. So what you're going to be doing is manipulating, well, in this case, it's the master branch, and what your process is for that will be up to you. Whether your CI can commit to master and whatever, fine. But you might want to have something like where master has branch protections, but then you have another branch for preview environments, for example, which doesn't have branch protections. And then, you know, branch protections can be, well, scoped to the branch. So then you can allow your CI to do those preview environments automatically.
Cool. I'll definitely keep that in mind. And one quick comment around, you brought up the zero trust kind of proxy stuff. I think I'd also mentioned, just based off Mike's comment around running in a private subnet.
Yeah.
There's one caveat, I think, with Argo CD, where if you deploy on a private subnet without like having ingress publicly available, I don't think you'll get the webhook feature where you can have it immediately changes. So,
or you can find a webhook proxy out there. So you send through a select number of requests. Also with ingress, a less frequently used feature is the ability to, first of all, a cluster, you can have multiple ingresses, controllers, and you can have a public ingress controller. And then what you can do is deploy a secondary upstream that just forks off the whatever the path is to the webhook URL, to that backend, but all other paths just 404. So, or go to the default backend, which is the 404 controller.
Oh, I didn't even think about that, as well as the proxy. That's a good idea as well. But just want to throw that out there. I think by default, I timed it. It took as long as 6 minutes for Argo CD to pick up the changes after merging a commit. But not bad, but obviously want it a little faster.
Git webhook.
I have kind of related
questions. This was one of the ones I was thinking of. We haven't deployed it personally, but looks like it's still being maintained. Git webhook proxy by Staccato. Go on.
I have kind of a related question. I don't know if this is maybe frowned upon, but I've been playing with just the Argo rollouts component of Argo CD. Like, I don't want to go full on Argo CD, or I don't necessarily have the need at the moment. And I found that Argo rollouts itself works pretty well for what I'm interested in, and it fits well in my existing pipeline. I don't know if anyone's thought about
that. Yes, so I would say that's almost one of the biggest reasons to go for Argo is to use the rollouts extension so that you can do more advanced strategies, not just rolling updates, which is the built-in. So I guess my only pet peeve with it is that it's a totally separate custom resource, which means that you have to have your own custom charts for anything that's going to work with Argo. And I guess it makes sense, and it's only for pods, and it's not for all the other things that you might need.
Yeah, but the spec is more or less the same as the deployment, the rollout spec. I literally just templated my existing deployment or my Helm chart to basically consume my deployment resource. And just rename it rollout with a couple extra knobs. It was pretty simple.
Actually, you could probably take any manifest and make it merge it through a JSONet function that does it.
Yeah, that too. And I guess you can do I don't know, this with Argo hooks, you can maybe do some pre-processing even. to do that, but that sounds dangerous. What I was going to say, though, is this is a perfect segue into another question you had in Kafta, is like what to do with your charts and where to put those. Have you heard me talk about the mono chart and that pattern?
I've read about the mono chart. I may have heard you talk about it. Unfortunately, I'm not 100% sure.
Right. The gist of it is just identify the classes of applications your company has and create charts around those classes of apps. So if you have Node.js front ends, and you got Python backends, and you got some batch processing services or something, those are the three patterns. So then come up with three types of charts. In our case, we just came up with a pretty universal chart, but that means that there's a lot of complexity and business logic in there. But now you centralize that, now you don't need to worry about charts anymore. It defines the interface of the application. The application picks an interface. It enforces consistency in your organization and reduces the sprawl of charts and tech debt around it.
Yeah, and that sounds like the approach I was kind of going down. I was thinking of something where it's very templated. You can do a Boolean for you want to ingress or not.
Yeah.
And making it support, different health checks, things like that. And then arguably it could go a little granular for the type of microservices, being Java Spring Boot versus Node.js, and just different differences between the stacks. But I appreciate that. Do you check them all into the same repo, or do you?
So in principle, I like the idea of keeping the chart close to the application so you can rev them at the same time. It introduces all these other complexities, though, because you're spanning tool chains, and that your CI system and CD needs to be integrated with that. What I love about this alternative strategy that we're proposing is it decouples that. So it no longer makes sense to have it in any one repo of like the applications, because it's an interface. So you would have a standard charts repository for those. And keep in mind, with the Helm plugins, and if you're using Helm file, it supports it natively, you can just source charts directly from Git, and you don't need to package artifacts anymore.
Oh, cool. I actually didn't know I could do that straight from Git. So I've got
Argo does that too.
And Argo probably has support for that then. Okay. Here's the thing. It's like with Argo, it is making things like Helm file redundant, so you definitely don't need to use it.
If you look at some of the sort of opinionated Argo examples today, actually, they really build on the fact that you pull things from various repos, like many various repos. So actually, there's a lot of examples that does that.
All right, Mikhail, did you hear? Were you on the first part of the call? I'm just curious if you have anything to add to how to architect for Argo CD, repo structure. Cluster architecture.
No, I can't say I have it for production because we don't run it in production yet. I just run it on the dev stacks.
Okay.
So I'm working on getting that integrated with Tonka, JSONnet, and what's it called, Tilt for a local development workflow. So I'm trying to make it, try to make all of that work in one single stack, either in Tilt or with Tonka from Argo.
How far have you come in the evaluation of Tilt?
I really like it so far. I only tried it with one app, but it's like, so I'm totally ignoring sort of the build part on the client side. I'm just assuming that I can jack in anything and make it work. But so far, I really, really like it. It just picks up any change I do and deploys, pushes it to the Docker repo hive, set up. And it's in my case, I have a local Kubernetes cluster on my laptop, and I set it up so it pushes to a local host, to Docker repo, which is accessible from within the cluster and stuff like that. So it just transparently modifies the production manifests so that it points to the correct images that it's pushing, that it's building and pushing. Oh. So I really like it, but I don't have anything else to compare it with. I've looked at Scaffold, but I haven't tried Scaffold yet, so I can't say. What I've heard is that Tilt is sort of the next step up from Scaffold, but I can't say for sure.
And did you look at Telepresence, which has been around for a while?
Only briefly.
Okay.
I made a really failed attempt at making it work inside a different Docker development container, so I haven't tried it on my host.
Okay. Well, thank you for the additional context. So, okay, then I wanted to just share the Helm Git plugin, which is this one, is the best one. This guy's in our SweetOps community as well, so feel free to reach out to him. Cool. Any other questions?
I guess I could maybe add one last thing about Argo.
Yeah.
That when you start using Argo, you always have the same issue of repeating environments. Say you want to repeat a certain environment 10 times and they all look slightly different, right? You need to customize it.
Yeah.
So now you need to customize the application itself, right? You need to repeat the actual Argo application, because now the hard work you're doing when you move to Argo is writing the Argo CRD itself, right? The application spec itself.
Yeah.
So that's... I haven't gotten to that part where I've made that comfortable yet. So that's the next thing, I guess.
What do you think about internal company tooling for developers that they just use a simple local client that you provide and your own very simple YAML markup that then generates that stuff for you? Have you thought?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've seen your sort of YAML markup thing that you base your stuff off. I've looked at that for years now.
Okay.
I'm very, very well aware of the option of doing that. Right now, I'm trying to get these applications I have, I'm trying to make it work in the local developer workflow, right? So I'm trying to move everything inside JSONnet. So I'm moving everything inside of the JSONnet spec. So my Tilt file is basically two lines. It reads data from JSONnet itself.
Mm.
So I'm trying to make everything on one place and just creating a Tilt library that reads the data from the same spot. So it's sort of the same thing, I guess, where the developer itself can do some overrides later on.
That sounds interesting. I'd love to see that sometime. I've not gone down that path, but I know that many are. So
I'm hoping I can make something interesting out of it.
Okay. So let's shift gears here quickly to, this is kind of a nice segue.
It is?
Yeah. Hey, Mon.
Yeah, sorry.
Hi guys, so this is my first time, so hi everyone. What about Jenkins X? So did you guys, anyone here test it?
I can only talk about it anecdotally. We helped a customer move off of Jenkins X this year. They were mostly burned by the fact that Jenkins X has done a complete refactor. And to the point of, who was it that just, oh yeah, Vlad was saying earlier how all these tools are still pretty young. We're talking Flux and Argo CD and Jenkins X too. So Jenkins X gutted the whole system and refactored it from scratch, and they were just burned by that and didn't want anything more to do with it. Now it's based on Tecton pipelines and some other stuff, but don't have any firsthand accounts of Jenkins X after that.
Okay. Thank you.
What I like about it, high level, is that it provides thought leadership on how to do this stuff, on how to do the CLI to manage it, how to do preview environments, how to promote changes, and I think there's a lack of that kind of thought leadership overall in the community. That said, it's opinionated, so it's going to be an invasive change in any organization to pick up Jenkins X. Oh, much more so over than using tools like Argo CD, which are less opinionated on that. So, So the question that Lauren was asking is Lauren is a frequent contributor as well in our SweetOps community, and. So he starts off asking a pretty straightforward question, which has an easy answer, of course, which is like, you know, how do I run a Docker container and point it at my local files? And we all know that you can just, you know, mount the local volume. But, I don't know, taking a step back, anybody, you know, worked with Java over the last, you know, 25, 30 years and, you know, had to write Java commands out, like, it's exhaustive, the parameters and how to do that. And that's kind of what has come of Docker. So you want a different kind of abstraction on that. So what Lauren really wants to do is, how can I run a binary in a Docker container but get a native-like feeling on my laptop? And this has become a pattern that a few of the developers on our Cloud Posse team have started using. I haven't personally used it, but they submitted some pull requests to make it work for OS X. So I know it works for OS X, I know it works for Linux, I don't know about Windows yet. And when you have NCLI installed, it gives you the ability to basically map, I think you create a dot file of some sort or a config file of some sort that maps a command to a Docker container, and then you can now continue using that just like a native command on your MacBook. So I'll share this link here.
Want to ask, yeah, why? Like, what's the desire behind doing this? I imagine it's not for Terraform, because we have tfenv and other things that can handle the different versions. So I'm not understanding the need behind it.
Well, yeah, there's a thousand ways to do version management, and everyone I guess the one thing that is true is that there are factions of developers that look at it in different ways. I haven't seen his exact workflow, but Igor on my team, what he's been doing is something pretty, actually revolutionary almost, I think, which is related to release engineering. So in release engineering, this is going to be a use case that I'm going to get to why he ended up using NCLI and like it a lot, is your pipelines end up becoming applications themselves that are so complicated. And yet, they are testing your application, but nothing is testing your pipelines. And if we go back to this concept of like the monochart and developing interfaces for your applications, classes of charts for your applications, you can do the same thing with your pipeline. So here's our, you know, SPA pipeline for single page applications. Here's our, Node.js microservice pipeline for those kinds of applications. And you create a few different classes of that. But how? But now that all those things, it's centralized, you're reducing the tech debt and the maintenance burden. However, they're all in the critical path of your ability to release software. So you need to test those pipelines. What proved to be very tedious was running all of those steps, all of those tests, using like local pipeline emulations, like GitHub Actions support local execution, Codefresh supports local execution. But it was very tedious, especially when the first five steps work and you're just iterating on this one step, step number 18 or whatever, I don't know. And having to rebuild the container and run it was very slow. So instead, what he did is he got the whole environment working natively on his laptop. So the scripting glue around all the tools, he could just run it locally. But the commands, which he didn't install locally, and the commands were all coming from these different images with the stuff. So it worked well for him. I don't have firsthand experience to testify that this is the holy grail. But this definitely solves the specific question that was asked of Lauren.
Thank you. Yeah, that explained it. Like, I couldn't imagine what workflow would need something like this. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, like Cloud Posse, we use GVSync for a lot of this stuff. So we just have all the commands in one container and then run the stuff inside of that. But
I have a specific use case. I have a specific use case for it, actually. And it's because we have the same. We have our own geodesic container, you might call it, mm-hmm. at our place. But then you have the case where maybe someone else wants to be onboarded and maybe he wants to go on and do one thing use our tools in our repo. Maybe he needs to run two commands out of all of those 30, 40, or 50, whatever it is in the container, right?
Yeah.
And now he has to download a one gig Docker image to get that running. So yeah. I would like to find a way to replace that entire geodesic image to something that's sort of transparent on your host.
Yeah.
It could be, in my old days, I would have solved it with a read-only file system that's mounted, a shared file system with everything on it, right?
Right.
That's the way you used to do it. You'd boot it up
on a shared developer EC2 instance.
Yeah, or boot up on a shared NFS root. You know, something that's maintained and managed, right?
Yeah. So this is the modern day alternative to that. With the added benefit that it works offline too, possibly if you have it all cache
load. Yeah, but if you were able to mount the remote, you know, an NFS root that has all the tools on it. The only thing you need to care about is your path. But in this case, you need to care about mounting everything on your local disk as well, right? Into the actual container itself. So it is another layer of trouble.
Yeah. And I would caution against them. the slippery slope with this, what I don't like about it is like, so you have these containers with the commands in them and possibly scripts in the containers, and then you have your scripts natively locally that are calling the containers, that are calling commands, scripts, and it's like
But you know, one of these cases could be like you're intending to run some of the versions in the container against one of the upgraded versions outside of the container. So I mean, there is a scenario for where
that
you want it
point.
As well. So
that is a good point. I think that sounds vaguely familiar as well when you say that, like being able to swap out one of the steps or one of the commands with a new version to test how it works. But good points. All right, so let's see here. I got two other questions, I think, or items on the docket. Oh, this is just a quick one. I mean, it's come up a lot, so I don't want to bore everyone on it, but it was specifically asked in our Terraform channel, like, how's everyone running tests for Terraform? And I'm sure the person who asked it probably has seen some of the options and is more curious on what people are using in practice for doing testing. And, this is the question here. So, we provide 100 plus examples of how we do it. And if you want to take a look at that stuff. It's just to, you know, go to github.com/cloudposse. All of our modules that work for Terraform 0.12, 13, and 14 have some tests. A more advanced example is with our EKS cluster, which tests that a functional cluster comes online. The downside, so here's the state. So I guess this is the biggest update I can provide, is that the current state of testing in Terraform is complicated for non-developers, people who don't come from a like software engineering background, because you do have to pick up some Go. But using TerraTest, which is kind of where the community has gravitated towards for testing, it makes it pretty simple to express your tests if you're used to looking at, you know, code like this. And you have the full access to the wealth of Go libraries out there. There's also Test Kitchen for Terraform. I believe the GitHub Terraform AWS modules, they do some of that. I'm not sure to what extent they have test coverage. This one does not look like it has it, but I've seen it, I think, in some of them. What I don't like about the Ruby stuff and testing, for the same reason I don't like the Python stuff, is unless this is what your organization uses for everything, you have to install the kitchen sink to get anything running. So that's why I really like the Go-based approach for testing this stuff. The other heads up, which was passed on by Anton Babenko a couple months ago, at this point I think, is that this is on HashiCorp's radar. They are looking into providing a Terraform native way of doing testing. And there is a kind of a proof of concept of this by apparently Mart, Terraform testing provider. And it's a interesting approach to Terraform testing. So the idea is you use this provider to provision some resources. Let's see if I can find this fast enough. And yeah, it provides like the